Good morning. I'm John Mahan with WINY News, and we have a very special guest with us today. This afternoon, we have with us U.S. Senator from Connecticut, Chris Murphy. Good to have you with us, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John.
Well, thank you very much for showing up today. We're glad to be here speaking with you. Could you just start off by telling us a little bit about what you're doing here today in northeastern Connecticut?
Well, we've had a number of really interesting events here today. I come back to Connecticut every weekend, and so I try to get out here to eastern Connecticut and northeastern Connecticut as much as possible. So started off this afternoon with a roundtable at Natchock Hospital in Mansfield talking about an effort that I have to try to reform the nation's mental health laws. There's not a single person probably out here who doesn't have a close friend or a family member who's been touched by mental illness, whether it be depression or something more serious. Like bipolar disorder, and people are being failed by the system every day. So we got together a bunch of providers and advocates to talk about a bill that I'm going to be introducing to try to make some major changes. Visited a great manufacturer out in Eastford who's making parts for jet engines produced at Pratt & Whitney. They've got about 300 people, so it was great to see a growing company out here, and I always like to touch base with manufacturers to hear how I can be helping them. And then we're going to be going over to Woodstock Academy to do a town hall meeting with students. So we'll have about 100 or so students there and be eager to hear what's on their mind. So, you know, when I'm ever back in Connecticut, I just try to get around to every corner of the state to make sure that I'm fighting for the things that people want me to be fighting for.
Absolutely. That's great to hear. And regarding the mental health legislation, the bill that you're talking about, would you be able to provide us with any specifics about what kind of ideas you guys are tossing around at this point?
Well, we're tossing around a couple ideas. Part of the problem here is just sheer capacity. People with mental illness who need help often can't find a practitioner, a psychologist, a psychiatrist who will see them or their child. And then we've got kids in crisis right now who are going into Day Kimball to the emergency room and staying there for 30 to 45 days in the emergency room simply because there's no place to put them. And so we've got to build a lot more capacity, more outpatient capacity, and more inpatient capacity for people with mental illness. Second, we've got to hold the insurance companies to task. A lot of insurance companies are denying care that's being recommended by doctors. And so we required some years ago that insurance companies cover the same amount of mental illness as you do physical illness, but that doesn't seem to be playing out in practice. So this is going to be two of the, I think, basic foundational ideas behind the bill that I'm doing. And I'm doing it with Republicans. So I found a pretty conservative Republican in the House of Representatives and a very conservative Republican from Louisiana, senator from Louisiana, and we're working this together so that we can try to get Republican and Democratic votes for it.
So, of course, right now at the national level, it's a big topic of conversation right now, especially following the terrible tragedy in Sandy Hook. And I imagine that definitely plays a big role in the national conversation that we're having right now at this point. But one thing I wanted to ask about is we as a society, we also hear a lot about the need to strike a balance between putting due attention on mental health issues and also putting due attention on issues involving firearms in our culture and in our laws. So sometimes you hear people who try to kind of steer the conversation 100% one way or the other, either all focusing on firearms legislation or they say all focusing on mental health legislation. How do you strike that sort of a balance?
Well, you know, anyone that has, you know, followed the story of Adam Lanza knows that there were multiple triggers for that tragedy. He clearly was very badly served by our state's behavioral health system. But he also, in my opinion, should have never had a weapon that powerful. He should have never been allowed to have 30-round magazines to do that kind of destruction with. And so there are a multitude of factors that lead to these tragic instances of mass killing. But the reality is that there are more people with mental illness who are the victims of gun violence than are the perpetrators of gun violence. And so you do have to be careful to try to equate the issue of mental illness with the issue of gun violence. There are times at which a mental illness overlaps with a predilection for violence. But in the majority, the vast majority of cases, people with mental illness never are violent. And so we should be fixing our mental health system because it should be fixed for the sake of every single patient who's being ill-served. Yes, it will likely have an effect that will lead to less episodes of violence happening, but we should do it because it's just the right thing to do.
I see. Now, for those of you who are just tuning in right now, we're speaking right now with U.S. Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut. I wanted to move on to a different topic now. And as I understand, you were recently appointed to the subcommittee involving transportation. So I had a question to you a little bit about transportation here in northeastern Connecticut. We had heard that you're looking into some different funding federally that would help a lot with the southeast area. But speaking with local lawmakers who represent this area, they're concerned right now in the governor's budget that there's really nothing that tackles the issues that we're having here in the northeast with our roads and our infrastructure with transportation. So is there any way or anything that you can possibly think of that we could be looking at for federal funds that could go towards transportation specifically in the northeast corner?
So, at the outset, what you're referring to is that I was just appointed to the Appropriations Committee, which is the very powerful committee in the Senate that dispenses money. Interestingly, Connecticut hasn't had a member of the Appropriations Committee in the Senate for about 28 years, and yet we're very heavily dependent on federal appropriations. We have a lot of federally financed roads and rail lines. We obviously do a lot of defense manufacturing here in the state. The company that I was just visiting in Eastford is a company that is very much reliant on defense work coming through companies like Pratt & Whitney and GE. But when it comes to transportation, we have to recognize that there's a corridor in eastern Connecticut that connects the ports in the southern edge of eastern Connecticut through northeastern Connecticut going up to Boston, the major economic metropolis in this section of the northeast. And so one of the things that we've been really fighting for is improvements to the rail line that runs up the guts of eastern Connecticut from the south to the north for freight purposes and eventually potentially for passenger rail service. Now, we don't earmark money any longer at the federal level, so we don't decide that we're going to put this federal this amount of federal dollars towards this federal project. The states now decide where that money goes. But I'm a big proponent of trying to increase the quality of the rail line that runs through northeastern Connecticut. There's a lot of businesses up here who could grow if they were able to put more of their product onto freight rail.
Absolutely. That sounds like a very logical response there. Another topic that we had heard about was that approximately 5,000 to 7,000 children in Connecticut, they say, are in danger of losing their health insurance if Congress lets the Children's Health Insurance Program expire. So we are wondering, is this program something that's important, in your opinion, to be renewed? And why is there a conversation around this if some people call for this program to be abandoned for fiscal or other reasons? Or,
well, we're having a big fight over health care, and this is part of that fight. We've had this program on the books for a long time. We call it the CHIP program, but in Connecticut, that money is used for Husky. So every kid that's on Husky is a beneficiary of this federal program called SCHIP. But of course, we're having a fight over the Affordable Care Act, and the Affordable Care Act here in Connecticut has insured over 200,000 nutmeggers with health insurance that they didn't have prior. And the reality is, it's just a lot of people in Washington who doesn't think the government should do anything to help people afford health care. And we know here in Connecticut that without government help, Husky or the tax credits that go to help people buy insurance through the Affordable Care Act, without that help, people just couldn't afford it. So, yeah, we're hopeful that we're going to get a bipartisan agreement to continue this children's health insurance program. But I'm also fighting back on these attempts to undermine the Affordable Care Act, because a lot of people in Connecticut, hundreds of thousands of people in Connecticut, have gotten insurance through that program as well.
Once again, for those of you guys who are just tuning in, we're speaking right now with Chris Murphy, U.S. Senator from Connecticut. So when it comes to the topic of foreign policy, what is your view on the threat that rebel extremist groups like ISIS right now pose to democracy around the world? And how much intervention should our American troops play in trying to put an end to such groups? Does this intervention cause more good or harm? And if it's a mixture of both, how do we find the right balance to employ the correct strategies?
Well, we could probably do a whole hour answer that question.
Is there any outstanding in particular points that you'd like to drive home about this, though?
Well, I think that there's three points that I'd make. The first is that ISIS is a grave threat right now to U.S. allies in the Middle East. But if they are able to establish autonomous control over a large section of territory in that region, they'll present a threat to the United States as well. The second is that you can't take ISIS on without the United States leading. And that's the reality, is that we are in a unipolar world today in which nothing happens in taking on these extremist groups without the United States leading that fight. And so we have to be involved. The third is that we need to understand what works and what doesn't work when it comes to U.S. intervention. And the Iraq War proved to us that hundreds of thousands of American ground troops in the Middle East kill a lot of terrorists, but frankly, they become bulletin board material such that more terrorists are recruited to fight with these groups than we end up eliminating. And so our partners in the region are saying, whatever you do, don't put American combat troops back on the ground. Help us fight this terrorist group. And so that's what I hope that we'll do. I don't support putting U.S. troops back on the ground, but I do support the United States leading in an effort to take these evil terrorist groups out.
Also here in Connecticut, lately we've had some record-breaking winter storms, and they've done a lot of damage. They've taken their tolls on taxpayers and also the local state and highway crews. Now, my understanding is that climate scientists generally agree that despite public perception that climate change only implies global warming, it actually entails extreme weather of all sorts across the board, including these winter storms. Do you think that extreme winters in Connecticut as of late and other parts of the country as well that have happened in recent years, do you think that that's related to man-made climate change? And if so, what do you think we should do about it as a country?
Well, you know, you can't tell on a day-to-day basis nor on a year-to-year basis whether a particular weather phenomenon is due to climate change or whether it's due to just random event. And so, you know, that's why it was funny that a senator came onto the Senate floor
with a snowball.
And he said, and he basically said, well, it's snowing today, so climate change must not be real, right? And everybody knows that that's a ridiculous
argument. And it
has
nothing to do with snow either, because I've heard that extreme weather events on both sides of extremely cold, extremely warm can happen from climate change.
Right, so I just don't want to overstate the case and tell you that I know that this winter's extreme snowstorms are due to climate change. What we do know is that the changing temperature of our atmosphere produces more unstable weather, both in summers and in winters. And there's a phenomenon connected to the temperature of the water in the Atlantic Ocean being rapidly chilled by wind and currents coming down from Alaska that can produce greater amounts of snowfall. So clearly climate change is going to lead to more erratic weather, more big snowstorms, more hurricanes. Whether this season is due to that phenomenon or not, I don't know. What I know is that if we don't stop this pace of climate change and global warming, we are not just going to see the ice caps melt and agricultural belts disappear, but we're going to see more and more ferocious weather patterns in parts of the Northeast.
And then my last question to you that I have is kind of a fun one and a bit of a curveball that we heard on an AP story earlier this week. I don't know if you've heard about this, but in a speech that President Obama had recently made in Cleveland, he talked about how down the road at some point in the future, compulsory voting might be something that we'd want to look into as a country, maybe also as states and municipalities. I'm not sure exactly how that would unfurl. What's your opinion on that, compulsory voting? Is that something that's far-fetched, way down the road, something in future decades?
Well, it's certainly something that's way down the road. I always hesitate to give opinions on something that I haven't given a lot of thought to. Listen, I think I would much rather have us inspire the people of this country to vote on their own, to realize that there are millions of people in other parts of the world who don't have the right of self-determination, who are beaten down, brutally repressed, oppressed by regimes that are installed without democratic legitimacy. You know, we fought hard. We gave lives in this country for the right to vote. And my hope would be that when we have local elections, more than 25% of people would come out and vote for a right that a lot of Americans have died to protect. So I think it's an interesting conversation to have, but you know, I'd hope that our focus right now is on trying to get people to do it voluntarily.
Absolutely. Well, for those of you who are just tuning in right now, we are speaking with U.S. Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut. I have to ask you now, Senator Murphy, are there any other topics that I didn't touch on today that you feel that are important that you'd like the public to know about?
Well, I'd love to talk about the Red Sox spring training and about the UConn women about to run through the NCAA tournament. But I guess we'll take those topics for another time.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, John.
Stopping by.
What's going on at WRNYradio.com?